No big sneezes here, Chris.
I love the audio blowout. Again, stuff that happens in the on-ramp sometimes stays in the on-ramp.
There was a good on-ramp today. Lots of laughter.
It was.
Can I say that you and I have arrived at a new place in our friendship, I guess? Can we say that?
That's good. That's well said. It's the it's the joy of realizing that familiarity is being built. You sort of have those moments where, you know, there's a little bit of a surprise story or a surprise gesture, a surprise action, and you realize the person that you're hanging with, you're like, that's different. It's totally hilarious, but it's amicable. And it's the type of stuff that I think classroom icebreakers attempt to do in a 5-minute session, I think, but you never really get there. It takes time. So part of it is now you and I have been hanging in bits and pieces for, is it 3 years now?
Yeah, 3 years. That.
So that's been the kind of the slow burn of getting to know each other and crack off and learn each other's some of the nuances. So a very, very excellent EDU relationship. And I think also today, because it was so funny, reminded me of the good friends you are too. So that was a good laugh in the front end.
If we can take a little bit of what we're talking about now and apply it to the classroom.
Okay.
It's those, I don't know about you. It's probably the same. It's those moments with your students where, like you said, the 5-minute icebreakers at the start of the year, they don't cut it. I mean, they make you feel a little bit better about where you are, and maybe you get to know the person sitting beside you a little bit better, but you go through experiences, and from those experiences, you build more rapport, right? So I can give you an example. Yesterday, my students earned this week 10 minutes of extra time, like free time.
Yep.
And I said, what do you want to do with it? And the couple of options were like, we could have extra recess in the schoolyard. I could take you over. There's a park right across the street from our school. And it's an amazing resource for our school because we have such a small yard. I said, I can take you across the street to the park. You can play on the play structure. You can have extra tech time. What do you want to do? They wanted to go across the street and play at the park. So we go to the park, and there's some really old school contraptions at the park that probably aren't allowed to be like in a schoolyard because of, you know, the old parks that they had the spinny things and stuff.
I right away think about those ones, you know, the ones where it's that giant spring mounted in the ground, and then there's some sort of a horse or animal. Like my kids, my own children go nuts on that, and they're just like, swinging left, like, I, you know, totally testing the physics of that spring.
I hear you. And we don't have anything like that, but we have a couple of things there that, let's just say, a couple of students had some difficulties. Me and the EA had to run in and kind of help them out of those difficulties. And from that grows like a, remember that time? And from that, you build good relationship, right? So I had some of that yesterday with my kids, which was really fun. But I think you and I have been, like you said, the slow burn, slow release over the past 3 years. We've had those moments here and there, and it just, they build and the friendship becomes stronger. So I'm glad you kind of said that because I could totally apply it to what I try to do with my students. And again, it reminds me of last year and how it didn't work as well last year. But yesterday I was at the rink, my son had a practice. And 4 or 5 kids from the school I worked at last year were there. They came over, they said hello. And it was funny because we weren't talking about school. Like they were saying, okay, which one of your sons are out here? I told them. Then they started reminding me of the stories I told them about that particular kid. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it was like a nice chat. Like when I was done, I walked back over to the dads that I was talking to. And they're like, how do you know those kids? Like from our conversation, they couldn't tell that it was a teacher-student relationship.
Right.
They're like, do those kids live in your neighborhood or something? I'm like, no, I taught them last year. Like, oh. Like, they were surprised at how, I guess, jovial and informal our short discussion was. But it was one of those things. Like, I taught 2 out of those 4 kids I taught for 2 years. So, like, that's a long time to spend with them and them with me. Anyway, relationship building, it's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to move into a more uncomfortable topic? I'm feeling comfort, wanting to talk about the discomfort. How do you feel about that?
I'm in.
Okay. I'll give you two. I'm going to throw out two things. You tell me which one resonates with you and that you could speak to.
Okay. Launch it.
Okay. For lack of better terms, I'm going to call one of them anxiety at work.
Mm.
And I'm going to call the other one
yard duty.
We could call it lunch duty instead of yard duty, but anxiety at work.
Yep.
And the weekend work week.
Yep.
Thinking. I don't know how to put that. You probably could say it better, but like the difference between the thinking you do on the weekend and the thinking you do during the week.
Mm-hmm.
Which one do you want to jump on?
Let's do work anxiety. Let's see if we swing back around to the work week versus weekend. I feel like one will kind of lead to the other. I feel like there's going to be some bridge points there, but let's do some of the work anxiety.
Okay. You want me to kick it off?
Yeah, kick it off.
As you know, I'm at a new school this year. I'm back in primary from junior. Things are rolling along. People are friendly to me. I actually have friends, people there that I can call friends in the building. My administration team is lovely. Like, I feel very comfortable with them. They're not giving me a hard time. I think I'm doing my job as best as I can with the tools I have. But I still wake up every morning and go to work feeling nervous. And let me throw in the little bit that's confusing me. I'm going to work feeling the way I used to go to work and feel when I didn't get along with my coworkers, when my admin was no good, and like there was lots of conflict there. And when I used to go and just feel like I wasn't making a difference. So I'm feeling a real conflict, and I don't understand where it's coming from. Because like I said, everything, like when you step back and you look at the situation, everything is A1. I love what I'm teaching. I've got a great group of kids that I feel already connected to. The building feels like home. I'm getting along with the people there. And my admin, I love my admin. Like, I don't feel like they're coming down on me. I feel like I want to step up and be better because of them. But I still wake up and go to work nervous every day. So that's kind of like, I don't know what it is. Once I'm there and I'm rolling, I'm feeling better. But I hate that I'm going to work in a state of mind that is reserved for fight or flight. Like, I don't feel like I need to fly or fight. I don't feel that. Now, I did write a blog post about numeracy and teaching math and not being the hottest about that, but I'm learning. Like, I'm reading, and my numeracy coach is working with me, and I'm sucking up everything she's putting down. So I don't know, man. But I mean, here's the thing. If I'm feeling this way, there's got to be other people who are feeling that way. Like some of the new teachers, I suspect I've seen the look on their face here and there, and they're looking like how I'm feeling when I get to work, and they're new. So, I mean, that's expected. And some new people don't get that. Some new people roll right in and jump in like they've been doing it for 20 years, but I've been doing it for 17 and I'm not feeling so great. So I just thought I'd put that out there. And maybe my thinking is, if we talk about the topic a little bit, I might get something from it. Or tonight when I'm chilling, my brain might do something with what we're talking about, and I might learn something new about myself or how I can adjust course to go to work and feel good about the awesome things that are happening.
I hear what you're saying about I've spent the week as well kind of observing self and thinking about me at home, me at school, me and the different groupings, I'm at a new school as well. I think in some ways, when we talked about in the summer that season two would have, like, we weren't sure what the tone of season two of Decoded would be about. I think this is the heart of our adventure this year. When the creature comforts of what you're familiar with sort of get sanded down a little bit. And for some people that could be they're in a new classroom. Sometimes that could be a new course that they're teaching. Sometimes it could be that they're working with students that they've never worked with before. I think those are in some ways entry level, because a lot of that automatically happens by default when you switch schools. Like, you just get a far larger swath of change, no matter how familiar a classroom may feel that you land in, or no matter how connected you feel to the students that you meet. There's still a lot of underlying tensions that I think that we as social beings are measuring and thinking about and still trying to put the plugs in the wall, so to speak. I'm feeling a lot of that too, that I feel compelled to sort of, I don't know if it makes sense outside of my head, but I feel compelled to sort of create a regimen in the morning that buffers me from that anxiety of arriving at work. So automatically feeling I have to leave by a certain time. There's only one or two routes that I will take. Like, I'm trying to sort of build familiarity into points outside of the context that I feel unfamiliar in. And it's funny because I think that brain split is keeping me a little bit at a distance at where I should be connected. Now, I arrive at work like you and I get into work mind and I drive through the day and I get stuff done. There are times where I do feel like I'm spinning my wheels a little bit and I pause. I've started to pause in those moments. I'm like, okay, you don't have to go talk to your department head right now. You want to, but that's not going to help you finish this actual task. It's just the thing that's occurring to you. What you really need to do is work on task B. Get back to task B. Task B is the thing that will actually give you peace, a little bit of peace now, but more peace away from work. But I'm unfamiliar with that because I'm a little more impulsive. I want to try and get that meeting done. I want to talk to that person. So I end up, what ends up happening is I get all these piecemeal bits of things that don't, there's no coherence to them. So I've had that little meeting. I found out this one little thing, but I haven't. So let's use an example of doing IEPs. You and I right now are working through IEPs. There's a whole lot of little bits to IEPs and a lot of suggestions I get from my colleagues on, you know, how to work through it. Do one page at a time for every kid, or, you know, like, you can sort of jump in and out. There's a lot of OSR reading. There's a lot of, in my context, chatting with parents and chatting with students. That in itself is a long game. Like, you can't really get it done in 1 week. But there's things about it that I, thinking back now when I go into this again, that I would streamline so that I would have some sense of having a hand on the rung, that I'm actually moving forward and completing it. That right now, because it's unfamiliar and I feel like it's all on me to complete, I have a higher anxiety with that than I do developing activities for my students. I feel it stealing from the same energy because there's only one bucket of, like, there's only one bucket that all that stuff has to go into. I don't have any sort of extra reserves to complete my daily work. It gets done or it doesn't. I think for me, the bigger part of my anxiety is coming around to the placement of things within the week. I'm not good right now in my job in a way that I would like to be. And it has to do with the transition. It has to do with the new work. It has to do with the dance between, what I think I should be doing because I'm in work mode and what's actually in front of me. And am I paying attention to some of those smaller moving pieces? I don't want to make it too vague, so I'll bring it back to a context. So this week we had safety events going on. We had a lockdown drill. The lockdown drill, I have done many of them in the past. I've never done them within the context of a community classroom before. I wanted to understand it at a very deep level. So this is my impulsive, I want to know. What I needed to do was to put myself into the hands of my EAs and allow them to teach me how to do it. And to sort of also go along with the fact that I have to see it in motion. And also take advantage of the fact that this was a practice. This is the time when you sort of figure out what you're going to do if there's a real situation. And I had a hard time with that because I kept on having conversations about it all week, checking back in. Okay, so we're going to do it this way. And ultimately, when I just followed their lead, it worked out okay. So it was fascinating to wrestle through that little bit of shifting my focus to sort of put myself in the hands of somebody else that is more experienced. And they said, Clough, you know, this is how it has been. It's a good system. This is how we're going to do it. But I had a tremendous amount of anxiety around that, wondering, because I didn't have it under control. I didn't have my mind wrapped around what it should look like. I didn't have my protocol locked, and I couldn't imagine myself in that space, yet I felt I was the one that was responsible for making it happen. And I feel like there's some similarity to that state of mind thinking to where you have your blog post, that sort of declaration of, I see it in front of me, but I can't quite keep the whole picture in focus. So I'm going to kind of work on this thing. I'm gonna sort of move through the discomfort of, I don't get the whole picture, but I'm gonna work on this thing in a way that's respectful to my own learning, but I'm also taking advantage of the resources around me. Like, I'm gonna let people kind of show me their practice so I can get familiar with it. And it's not comfortable. And like you said, there's, you know, talking about younger teachers that might be rolling through these moments the first 4 weeks. And I won't say that the first 4 weeks are going to be any easier than the next 4 weeks or the last 4 weeks. There's a whole lot of stuff that you can get anxious about that causes stress. I too have seen the occasional teachers coming in for, you know, long-term chunks, and I can see it on their face. I can read it. I can read as I'm walking. I'm like, yeah, they're doing that hustle to that place that they think they need to get that thing done. And it just makes me wonder, like, what list are they following? Are they actually moving in time with their own list? Are they kind of like on somebody else's checklist? But I've definitely felt that. I feel like I'm creating systems. I feel like I'm creating systems to ease my anxiety, but I'm not sure if I'm creating systems that is making my job easier. And it's a mind messed kind of place to be. It's like putting Band-Aids on stuff. Just a little bit like Band-Aids.
Cool.
I know. What do I say?
What do we say? Like, I dropped my bit of experience. You dropped your bit of experience, and it's kind of nice that we're
both. It doesn't have to mesh either. That's one of those things. Like, it's an admission. I'll say often we do it too, I think, but you listen to other reflective pieces from other people. Like, I feel zero compulsion to put a bow on that. I feel zero compulsion to say, like, you said something that triggered me. Here's my memory and my experience. I mean, we could still keep hashing it out because we're like, okay, like, what are, you know, strategies? Hey, new teachers, let's decode this some more. Sometimes it is. It's just that context is, I have to spend the time away from reflective practice. And that's actually, I would say, closer for me right now. Spend some time away from reflective practice and get to action practice. just do stuff that teaches me how to think about it, as opposed to the other way around. Do you like the term theory into practice?
Do I like it?
What's your response?
To that term, theory into practice, I would say I like it. I would say I'm okay with it. I would say that's where the rubber meets the road. And
what about practice into theory?
I think I like that one better.
I feel like I'm
better because practice theory lives by itself. In my theory is by anybody can come up with a theory.
We've heard and read those posts.
Anybody can come up with a theory. I mean, I do it all the time. I theorize all the time. But then it's the action. Can you execute that? How does it play out in real life, live action, real time? How does it play out? Because sometimes, well, I'm writing this down. Okay. Theory into practice. You know why? Because I'm about to go off.
Okay.
Here's the thing.
I feel like I should step back, but I'm really comfortable in my chair. You know, there's like 120 kilometers between us. I think I'm ready. Is everyone else out there ready? Here it comes. Go.
There's nothing better than reading something or sitting in a room or listening to a podcast or watching YouTube video and hearing somebody talk about how I should be operating in my classroom when they've never been in a classroom or they have a doctorate. I'm picking on you people now. You have a doctorate in education or in some other field. You've got these wonderful ideas and these theories on how things could operate in a room, a classroom. But you've never been in my classroom. You may have had your own. And if you've had your own classroom, then I salute you 100%. And I will be more likely to like take my time to listen to your theory and then do my best to initiate it and see how it works in my room with my students in the context I work in. More than happy. But when you've not been in a classroom and you're not a teacher, you don't know, you've not been in a number of different contexts, different grades, different schools, different administrators, different working situations, then I take a step away at first. I think I respectfully listen and pay attention to the theory. And then I analyze my situation and see whether it's going to work for me or it's not going to work for me. So, Chris, I didn't go off like how I thought I was going to go off, but if you have a theory and it's going to help me in my classroom, I'm all in. But if you have a theory and you want me to do something with it, and it's going to be added on to the 100 other things I need to do, I don't know what's going to happen to your theory once it enters my classroom. And I'm willing to wager that the majority of educators that know me and have worked with me will tell you that I attempt to do the things I'm directed to do. So I don't just say, I'm not doing this. I might say that at first and be like, whatever, this isn't happening. But then I go back to my classroom and I calm myself and then I start to do what it is that they say I should be doing. And I just go with it and I see how it works. And if it's not working, then I talk to people and ask around, how do I do this? How do you do this? And in time, there's been a lot of silence. Now that I think of it, I've gone to people and I've said, hey, how do you make this work? Silence. That tells me that it might not be happening and I just need to back off. And then there's the other people that make it work, no problem. And then, you know, they're more than happy to share their ideas. And here's the thing. I'm about to drop something here that is a total decoded moment. And it just left me. Which is either my brain says, don't say it out loud, or it really did go. When things get added, here it is. When things get added on or appear, they feel like they're being added on, something has to fall off.
Yeah.
And hey, I'm the first to tell you, if you're out there and you're a teacher and you're making everything work, hit me up. I would love to talk about how you do it because I don't know how to do it. And I've seen lots of teachers that don't know how to do it. And dare I say that I've even seen some very effective teachers who are effective in one or two areas, not so effective in two or three other areas. So let's not pretend that that doesn't happen. Let's not pretend that that doesn't exist. When you tell me to do this, I will work to that, but something falls off because I can't have them all there. Mm-hmm. So I'm back in the primary classroom, and if you've seen some of our decoded videos, our binary videos, I'm loving my yellow folders. They scare me, but I also love them because I feel like they can provide me with so much information as a classroom teacher about my students' language literacy. They are valuable. I actually enjoy balanced literacy assessment measures in primary because they give me so much. So I kind of geek out on them a little bit as a teacher. But when I'm doing those BLAM folders, other things aren't happening because I have to get them done. I have to work on those folders. If I don't do those folders, then I can't get the data I need. And I know there are some teachers that look at those folders and just procrastinate and put them off, and do little bits to say that they're doing bits, but they're not really doing them. Well, hey, I'm not judging them. I'm just saying there's something else on their plate. Maybe it's numeracy. Maybe they spend 3/4 of the day doing math and they're rocking the math, but their language literacy isn't quite as awesome. So this last week, I made it clear that I need help with numeracy, that when I got my new job, I was very open about my fear of old school math, that I was never successful with it as a student, that as a teacher, it scares me to teach it. I do it, but can I be more effective? Of course I can be more effective. So I came right out and said it. Like, it's on my plate, and if I can knock it off, if something happens during the day, and I can say, oh, we don't have time for math, that's where I'm going to go because it's not my comfort zone. But I'm busting out of that. And part of that is coming out and saying, it's not my forte. I need to work on it. And I am working on it. But, and they're heavy on that too. Like, they want us to do number talks during the day. They want us to do math in like 2 or 3 different ways. There's a million resources we could use. Some people don't have a numeracy coach. Last year, I didn't have a numeracy coach. Last year, it was just me doing my thing. And I was lucky because there was a teacher in the building that was very gifted, very skilled in numeracy, and also a kind person. So I could go to her and say, I don't get this. How do I do this? Can you tell me more about this and how I can like engage my students with it? And she was awesome. She helped me through. But I wasn't feeling like I was being as effective as like I have been the past 4 weeks because of the numeracy coach working with me. So there it is, Chris, theory into practice. I enjoy theories, but I have a hard time when I'm stressed and busy. I have a hard time with somebody. I'm just throwing out there, they've got a doctorate in whatever. They know something really well. And then they're going to tell me how it's going to run in my room, but they've never been in my room. They've never experienced what it's like to have a classroom and the layers. But I say that, but I want to be clear that I'm just saying it now because I can say it now. But I do respect where those people are coming from. I recognize how hard they work to get to where they are and you know, what they had to do to accumulate the knowledge and understanding that they have. I get it. But when you're stressed, IEPs, report cards, student success, special education, ESL, poverty, hunger. When you're dealing with those things, sometimes you take that theory and you shelf it until those other things are under control, and then you bring it back out. That's my take on it.
I think that the flow of the day, often gets kind of chunked up with these things that you say are, I don't know if I like the term, but sort of added into the mix. Like, they feel like an add-on to the actual day. I really try to sort of figure out the through line to the day where I feel like it's a balance between orchestration and just feeling out the moment. Like, it's sort of like, it's almost like when you hit that sweet spot where you make it like to be able to do to get your duties done and to get your marking done and to get the planning done and to get the coverage done and to get the initiative driven stuff done and to get that assembly done. And then also to sort of deal with the social supportive moments where, you know, there's a student that you need to spend time mentoring, or there's a family that you have to meet with, and then all these things that happen on the inside. It's I really do feel the tension between my system wanting to course correct. It's a simultaneous sensation of course correction and losing gravity, like almost like on a tide, like you feel like you're just sort of being sort of pulled away from what's the comfortable center. And like you mentioned, the comfortable center for some instructors, there is only so much space in that center where you feel like you're sort of getting enough of what's expected to be done to respect the system and the kids and your colleagues and your own family. It's just such an incredible wrestling match on the day-to-day basis. And again, no complaints here. This is observations of experience. And I think sometimes, depending on how that could be heard, I can imagine someone listening like, well, you're so lucky, like, look at you, you're so privileged to be able to complain about something that I don't have, Clough, like that stable job or you know, something at work that interests you. I get that from the outside. But if I observe just my experience of being in the classroom and working through some of that stuff, like literacy, numeracy, and poverty and hunger and housing, scarcity, if I work through all those things, then you start to realize that there's only so much that can be slotted onto your checklist. Because at some point you leave the building, and a lot of what we do is contextual. Like, I would say there's a very large percentage that really needs to be done while you're at the school and you have the resources around you. Now, like many teachers, I bring work home. I often find, though, the work that I'm doing at home, there's a percentage of it that I feel like by doing it away from work, that it's not as connected as it should be. I really do appreciate being able to get my work done in context with the resources and people around me that support that work. I do feel a strange sort of distancing where I wonder, am I actually on track with this task, this exercise, this thing that I'm building? And that type of tension, it's a very strange mindset to be in. It's part of what makes, I think, for me, prepping in summertime a bit of a strange beast to do, because I always feel like I feel like I'm doing a lot of work, but I always wonder if it's in the right direction. It's almost like I need the responsiveness of being in the classroom, being in the school, staying connected with the kids, staying connected with the parents, staying connected with like the colleagues in the system, to know if I'm sort of moving in harmony with what it should be done. Because the counter side to all this is there's nothing worse than doing a bunch of work that you just can't action. And that time that is sort of blown through it, I feel the personal cost. So I want to be intentional when I'm actioning things. As far as the practice into theory, I've heard it. I get a little, I don't know if I notice as quickly when people are speaking. I notice when people might be speaking about a context that I might be teaching in. They might be teaching, like talking about thing. But I don't know if I have as a clear of a reaction if I feel like someone's telling me about my teaching space. I'm aware of individuals that it seems like this is a little bit more theoretical. And I've reached back out to people to clarify, can you give me a specific example? Can you tell me what this looked like? Even if it's from a dated memory, what did this look like when you were in the classroom? And you're right. Sometimes it's crickets. I don't get a message back. And you know, I back off too. I'm not going to invest my time if someone's not going to share. I'll kind of move on. But I know for me, right now, this past week was very much about starting to push the envelope of actioning things. And tightening up the actual list and kind of putting the theories aside. I think there's some strange comfort in theory sometimes. Actually, I'll say for a fact, this past 4 weeks of learning what it means to be at a new school, theory hasn't helped me. I have to read those emails. I have to meet the people. I have to build that activity. I have to do the planning. And I'm on the counter side of that flow where it's just been so much actioning in response to what's in front of me. So Like for instance, this weekend, it's about IEPs. I know that I have to look at the next unit for the learning strategies class that I'm working on with another teacher. I have to build, I have some roughed out activities that I want for my ASD class, but all of that is there's zero theoretical about it. Just have to do the work. So then you just have to find the hours in the day. So now I'm slowly coming around to, you know, I think the second part to what you said, do you want to go left or right on this one, Clough? That idea of the difference between weekday thinking and weekend thinking. Or in our on-ramp, I think I put to you, you know, how well do you protect the weekend? Do you protect the weekend? And I don't mean to protect the weekend by avoiding the work. I mean protecting the weekend by somehow boosting productivity during the week. So I'm still not sure how I'm going to do that. I feel like I have to make a list. Why do I feel like I have to make a list right now?
Hey, feel free. I know you have a pen and some paper. Sure, so yeah. Not. But I get what you're saying about the, well, thanks for the theory into practice talk. I'm feeling better about it. I'm going to just say it again. My wife hates it when I do this, when I repeat myself over and over again, but there's something comforting. Like I need to comfort myself. Mm-hmm. And we're always looking to maximize student achievement. I'm in 100%. I want my students to learn. I want them to do well at school and I want them to do well in life. Right? That's what we're there for. But I just feel like sometimes whoever they are, the machine, they just keep thinking, we'll just give it to teachers. Let them do it. There's so much we have to do. And there's so much that you can't account for. Some days are written off because of what's happening during the day. I've had chunks of time go away because something happened at recess and it needs to be discussed because I need to show my students that you don't just have a situation and walk away from it. You have to deal with things, right? That's part of being a responsible citizen. That's part of being a good person. The motto in my class is we walk towards Jesus. We're not walking towards Jesus when we slap somebody in the face at recess, then just don't deal with it. There's no debrief. There's nothing. There's just, yeah, that person pissed me off, so I hit them. Mm-hmm. We're not going to create good people in society if we ignore those things. So, yeah, they need to learn math. They need to learn how to read and write, but they also need to learn how to be good people. And I think that's the part of school that there's no curriculum there. Like, I have a religion and family life program which helps with that, but nobody sat me down in teacher's college and said, oh yeah, don't forget, during this time of day, you're going to make these people better. It's like integrated into everything you do. You get what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, totally, totally.
And
yeah.
I'm sure people will disagree with me and they'll throw whatever at me. Great, throw it at me. But there was no course about making kids good people. It's just integrated in what we do. It's like unwritten.
That's
it's
a unspoken. Powerful observation. Sorry, that's a powerful observation when you sort of break down, you know, the shape of things. Yeah, there was nothing there that said, not even a by the way, there was no hint. There was no suggestion. Nothing.
It's what we do.
Whatever it is, at some point, 10 years in, 15 years in, 18 years in, you realize the thing that you're fighting for is that exact frame. It could be about the curriculum. It could be about all these other things we talked about. But when you dress it down, you distill it down, it's the making these littles into better biggies. Like that's what it comes down to. And all the complications that come along with that. I think that's a good pause just to consider. All you out there listening to us, pause and reflect on that. Here's a reflective moment.
I'm going to go to all of you listening out there, and I'm going to come back to weekday thinking versus weekend thinking. When I logged into the email today to send you the link to this podcast, there was we got an email from some podcast marketing thing, and I read it, and they were basically like, they notified us that someone had left a review on iTunes of our podcast from, I think it was from June.
Okay.
And it was Sarah Lalonde who said something really nice about our podcast. Like, it's the two of us talking. How could you not listen to it? So I sent her a quick message just to say thanks, but I just made me laugh. For all of you listening out there, there's like three people that might catch it because they're bored or whatever. They're traveling.
At this point, then I think it's suffice it to say is, Sarah, thank you. Sarah, thank you. Right?
And at this point, it's safe to say that Decoded Podcast is a bit of a hidden gem.
I would say.
Because we don't really have any traction, but we're consistent and we're putting out some content. So
It has the what the heck factor. The what the heck. Someone will discover, you know, whatever X number of episodes we get to. And they're like, they've been doing this now for, they're 200 episodes, 300 episodes? What the heck? What the heck?
Weekday thinking versus weekend thinking. For me, when I read that phrase and when you say it, when I get to the weekend, I'm still thinking about work. There are parts that don't go away, and that's because of the lists of the lists of the lists that I keep making. But there is a feeling of calm. There is a feeling of I'm in my time now, not anybody else's time right now. And for me, the weekend has a lot of things built into it with respect to my family, which means that sometimes I have to turn off the weekday thinking. But when I'm at work during the weekdays, my brain is just racing with the things that have to be done, with the things I have to address, which maybe is part of the problem with respect to my anxiety, is that when it's on like from Monday morning to Friday afternoon. And when I get home, it slows down because I'm at home. And like you, I'm trying to figure out how can I be more productive at work so that at home I don't have to spend the time doing the things that I could do at work. But like I told you, things happen. Like I told you, let's just recap just briefly about the story I told you my day yesterday.
Okay.
I had a list of things to do. They were weekday stuff, school stuff. I didn't want to do them on the weekend. I wanted to get them done at school, but I get to school and, you know, I find out one of my colleagues is not feeling well and there may not be an occasional teacher for him, which means I'm not going to get any preparation time. And Fridays are the days that I get double preparation time. So I was banking on using that time to get through the weekday stuff. But because he wasn't going to be there and we didn't have anybody, my brain had to shift to like a survival mode. How do I make sure I get through Friday properly and I'm planned and ready for Monday? Because I don't like to do that at home. I like to do that at school to plan for the next day. And then I had to shift back again because I was told like minutes before the day started, oh, there's somebody here for that person. Now, I know it doesn't sound like a big deal to anybody out there, but to me, that shift takes a lot of energy. So I got to work thinking I was going to hit everything on my list. Then my brain had to shift to think nothing on my list is going to get done because I have priorities that have to happen like during the school day with the kids, and I have no time to do anything else. And then I had to shift again because then I was told, oh no, you are going to get your time now. And I know like just saying it doesn't sound like a big deal, but that thinking in the moment, those shifting, those decisions that you have to make, they start to wear you down. They start to exhaust you. And then I told Chris, there was another layer there. My son forgot something in the car that he needed for the day. So I had to figure out how it was going to get to him. So my brain was there too. And then I wasn't feeling so great at lunch. So that took time out of my life because I wasn't feeling well. So how can I do my work when I'm not feeling well? I need to take some time for me, but there's no time except the lunch when the kids are out. So that time was spent dealing with me, trying to gear up for the afternoon. When those things happen, now some of the stuff that was supposed to happen yesterday has naturally shifted to the weekend because it has to get done. But I reserve the right and the space in my brain to compartmentalize the school, the weekday thinking, not to ignore it, but to just say to it, you sit over here and settle down. I'm going to go watch my kid play hockey. I'm going to talk to my wife about her week. I'm going to spend some time with the family just being stupid and silly. But don't worry, I'll get to you. It's just not going to happen on your terms. It's going to happen on my terms for the over the weekend. I don't know if that answers the question. It just gives you a flavor for where I'm coming from. I feel like from September to June, we are on for 10 months. There is no stopping. There's always, I'm always thinking of something's always on my mind with respect to the weekdays, but there's a balance. So during the weekday thinking is high priority. And on the weekends, it drops so that my weekend thinking is priority. But this stuff is still here. It's not like I take it and just dump it. It's there. It's just not getting number one priority.
It's yeah, I'm on point with that. There's no way I can completely I can't make the week disappear. I can't ignore the responsibilities. I can't avoid the work. Where I'm starting to say, what can I do to protect the week? And is there a similar tool I can do to protect the weekend? And is there ways to make sure that I'm maximizing weekend life, which is away from work, so that I feel like when I'm hitting back up the week, that I'm better for the week? And how do I maximize the week? So I'm hitting up the weekend, I'm better for the weekend. And I mentioned we were talking in the on-ramp. I tell myself, I'm not the guy that looks forward to the weekend. I just kind of flow through the transitions of Monday through to Sunday, and then it kind of wraps back around. And the same thing for the summers. Like I don't get the sense, like that sense of kind of launch in June where I'm like, we're almost done. We're going to have those two months off in the summer, you know, in air quotations or otherwise we have time downtime. But I think I need to start looking at, if not highlighting that stuff, being aware of my focus, so that when I'm in the space, it kind of comes back to, am I actually in the moment? Is enough of me in the moment to make sure that I'm completing a bigger part of what I expect of myself and what the system expects of me? And on the weekend, the system is my family. I want to swing that percentage. Like you said, I want to swing the system. Am I fulfilling my family's system expectation because I have the time to do that? And during the week, it kind of moves a little bit where the larger chunk of my time is spent fulfilling the system of my job. So that's, it's, and you're, and for me, it becomes down to, you know, adjusting some of the timing, you know, it's like that big soundboard, you know, you're kind of swinging the knobs a little bit, adjusting the volume and the tone and the treble. I've just, for some reason, I think the new context has made me aware of that. Because I don't have, in the same time I say I'm not settled, I think that's a good thing because it's making me reevaluate what are the things that are actually working for me, the things that I'm working at, but it's not effective, and what's kind of on the distance that I need to start kind of working towards. And it's an interesting reflection space because my weeks have been so busy. I tell myself my weeks have been so busy that I'm starting to believe myself, but I don't know if I could speak to the evidence as clearly as my conscience is telling me. Because I think sometimes, you know, when you get busy, whatever it is that is you, yourself kind of says, well, you know, like pull up, relax, things will be okay. You'll kind of get to it. And I start to realize sometimes that's an external voice. Other people that are saying it's okay, you're on the right track, you're in good shape. And I don't often feel I hate to say it like this, but I almost don't feel appreciative when people tell me you're doing okay, you're on the right track, everything's going to be all right. I need more of the, because that's theory. That's that theory talking about my practice. What I want is, that reminds me what you're going through right now. That reminds me exactly what week two of this month and I did this thing. Because I can listen to that and I can parse out my experience in relation to their experience and then walk away like I haven't been judged or overly complimented. I can say, you know what, that one thing that you said, that's the thing. I'm going to go do that right now. And I think that's going to help me out a little bit. Back to where we started in the podcast. I think that's where you and I was one of maybe the few times where we just sat in our separate experiences and kind of said, go ahead, think about that. Here's like, you don't have to have the theory that glues two people's practices together like they are harmonized. And I feel in some ways our two contexts are, there are some similarities, but there's also a whole lot of bag of work that goes along with it. That just what we got to get done. I'm looking at that bag of work that I bring home after hours and on weekends, and I'm pulling it out and literally taking one piece and telling myself, you should have got that done while you're at work. Why did you bring that home? Looking at another piece, that is the one that you need to get done at work because you need these certain resources to get it done. And just being very, trying to boost my intentionality around that. If I bring this right back to being a dad, is that this school year, this summer into this school year, I've also been hyper aware of my kids growing up and watching them shift from, and this is my mental set, shift from being children into people. And I don't know if this is something that only parents would understand. I don't even know if it's something that you understand, but I sort of look at it like all of a sudden this year, I'm starting to see them evolve into individuals away from me. And as soon as that starts to happen, it's a powerful moment. I had this instantaneousness of don't miss out on this. Cause this is a moment that you need to stay connected with, you know, my daughter in a conversation, my son in one of his activities, the family hanging out together. And that I think was a little bit of the seed point to thinking about, am I doing the best job possible to balance the expectations of the job, both mine and the system expectations of the job, as well as expectations of the family, both mine and what the family expects. So I think in a lot of ways, the provocations that we send back and forth during the week from some of the different people and motivators and thinkers that I've come to enjoy and, you know, we've shared back and forth, I think those become, that's the most tolerable theory that I'm trading right now. A lot of the other stuff, not so much. That is the theory right now. And for, you know, when people that listening, sometimes we'll bounce back and forth something from David Goggins, something, you know, from Gary Vee, there's a couple, Mel Robbins, there's a few people that seem to be speaking in a way that wrap around my experience that doesn't feel like it's crushing it, but it just shakes me up to say, you know, like, don't stop thinking, don't stop pushing, don't stop doing. So, damn, I wish I had a good sort of stopping point on this thought, but I don't. I got to hit your wall of thought. Stop me. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking I can appreciate what you're saying about your children. You're starting to see them shift from, I don't know what to call it, but like, I'm going to say something like depending on you to moving away and becoming more independent and feeling comfortable in their skin. And I get that. I hear what you're saying. That's happening to my oldest. He's totally shifting. And I don't know what to do to connect to it. My youngest isn't shifting yet, but I think he's being placed in situations and experiences that are helping him shift faster, which my older son didn't have.
Is it because he's tagging along with the older?
No.
Or observing the older?
No.
No,
neither. It's my older is shifting because of his age and where he's at in his life and his development. My younger, I could see the shift happening sooner because of his life experiences, because he plays competitive hockey. And at that level, the coaches start treating kids in a different way. It's funny. I was observing this yesterday at the practice. It's almost like the coaches forget that they're working with eight-year-olds. Because what I see in the dressing room when I'm helping tie skates and when they're on the bench alone, I see eight-year-olds, and I understand eight-year-olds from a developmental perspective as an educator. They're looking at the eight-year-olds not as eight-year-olds, but as a competitive hockey team. Therefore, they are going to start acting this way. They are going to start performing a certain way. It's interesting because there's two worlds that are colliding. I'm sure that those coaches would not want to hear my theories about their practice. I'm pretty certain that if
that's
I said,
"Hey, sweet connection. That's such a sweet connection. Well done. That was good. That was good."
Yesterday, when they were on the bench before practice, the coaches were on the other bench. You see, the coaches get dressed in a different room. My response to this is, who's supervising the 8 year olds in the dressing room? Because they're 8 year olds. And therefore, they're going to be distracted. They're going to cause problems, if you will. I'm using that for lack of a better word. There's going to be shenanigans in the dressing room. So when I go into the dressing room, it's guised as I'm here to tie my son's skates and anybody else who needs it. But you over there, sit down and be quiet and get your stuff on. And once your stuff's on, you can start talking again. You over there, do you really need to yell in my ear? Like, I do a little bit of that because it's like, hey, I'm tying skates. Can you guys turn it down? Like, you're yelling like it's indoor recess. You got to stop. But the coaches are in the other room strategizing about the practice. Nobody's supervising these kids. So from an educator's perspective, you know, I could talk to them about the development and the zone of proximal development for eight-year-olds. And they're probably going to tell me to take a hike because we're at the rink. We're not in the classroom. And so my son, my youngest, I can see him shifting. He says, get out of the dressing room, Dad. You're not supposed to be in here. And I'm like, no, it's a practice session. I'm allowed in here. In fact, I'm encouraged to tie skates. So my son is growing into a maturity because of his experiences in the sporting event that he's participating in with the kids he's with and with the adults who are supervising him and teaching him the norms of how to operate in that type of sporting environment. So he's, I can already see a progression of independence. Will he be able to apply that to real life experiences outside of the hockey? I don't know. That's where he's probably not ready to grow and thrive because he's eight. It's possible, but I'm not expecting that. So when we get to the rink, the norms and the expectations there have forced him to become more independent. Whereas my, 12-year-old didn't have that when he was eight and playing hockey because he wasn't playing at the same level with the same norms and expectations. You get what I'm saying?
Yes.
So having said all that, I can't remember. Oh, you were talking about my thinking about what you said. And so that came to mind. That came to mind with respect to the theory.
You know what chokes me? I got to say what chokes me and is also when I think about those experiences. I start to think of it in a way like my kids experiencing learning from another parent. And that just kills me because you start to realize like that growth comes with the cost that I'm not as centered in their universe as I was just a second ago. I got this memory. I wrote about it. I wrote some poems about it, about seeing my daughter walk into the TV room a couple years back. And the way she moved through space was no longer like a toddler. And I just had this choke moment where I had to do a double take. There wasn't in that moment, she wasn't what she was, what felt like just a moment ago. There was no toddling. She was like a kid. She was like, there was something just more fluid. There was something different. And my takeaway suddenly is like, kids are growing up. Like that's all I could sort of safely do without tearing up too much. Like just realizing that the growing up and its relative growing away. And yeah, I just pause on that dad moment for a second. I'll look down at my drawing. I'll put my tears on my sketch note.
Hey, it's good to know that you're a human, right? Let those tears roll, dude.
Yeah, I know. I know.
I hear what you're saying. And I get it. I guess I don't feel as emotional about it at the moment, but I get it. You know, my oldest son's going to be going away this week for 2 nights and 3 days with his grade 7 class on a retreat. Like, he's not going to be here for 3 days. He's going to be sleeping somewhere else.
Have your kids done camps before and stuff like that, or is this a first?
No, this is not like overnight.
Right.
So, you know, we were talking about it with them just last night at dinner. And there's that piece of me that like, oh my God, he's going away. He's going to be sleeping somewhere else with a bunch of kids and teachers. And we're not going to be with them. The dynamic's totally going to shift at home. And then there's some worry about, will he be able to survive? Like, will he shower? Will he brush his teeth? Will he comb his hair?
Those are the when you know, listeners out there, when you talk about parents talking about their children surviving, I think that's the safe things you fall on. Like, that's the stuff that you only want to worry about, you know, deodorant, brushing teeth. Are they going to eat? Are they going to sleep well? Because there's probably a whole other layer to this that you could just totally calamitize your brain about what survival would mean. But I too fall in the safe stuff. Will they get a good night's sleep? Will they eat? Will they be nice to people? You know, like parent simplicity.
Exactly. I have to roll onto this next thing, and then I'm going to let you have the last thought.
Okay.
And we'll call it a weekend for the podcast. But
all right.
I've noticed I'm now that teacher. I'm now that older teacher that talks about his kids in a proud way at work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that the younger teachers that don't have kids are like, oh God, he's talking about his kids again. I'm that guy now. And I've kind of been, I've kind of embraced it.
Yep.
Because I'm aware of what it is. I'm that guy now. Like, I remember those guys and gals that would talk like that when I was new, and I had no clue really what they were referring to or what they were talking about. And now I get it. I found out that the EAs in my class are basically half my age. And it's just funny how like my world and their world are so different. Like, we had a situation in class and I referred to a Seinfeld episode. And both of them were like lost. They're like, well, what are you talking about? So I start to tell them, and the one of them says, well, my dad watches Seinfeld. So I'm familiar, like my dad watches it. And the other one was like, I have no clue what you're talking about. So I literally had at lunch, I had to send them a video clip, a YouTube link to a part of an episode.
Probably that I was in square to. Box too, eh? Was the link actually, was it full screen or, you know, it's like the old TV, the old square screen.
I don't remember, because I was just so like, I was so bothered that they didn't know what I was referring to. But that's where we're at today. That's where we're at. And I'm comfortable with it. And I'm proud of my kids. And the fact that I have kids is like a total miracle. So yeah, I mean, it's all good. But I'm aware. I know that I'm that guy. I know it, and I'm okay with it. So that's how I'm going to stop today. Tell me what your final thoughts are. Are you going to drop any homework on anybody?
Yeah. See, I've been avoiding homework. I haven't really been mentioning stuff. What I will say is that moment that you're saying about, kind of noticing your life in relation to the life around you. So it's not just sort of noticing, you know, what your colleagues are doing, but the fact that you sort of like are injecting, family stories into your day. I mean, I've been that teacher for a long time. I've done that sort of style of sort of drawing together narratives that I believe will somehow help the moment. I have noticed though that there's a segment of younger teachers that I've noticed that are really paying attention to my stories. And then I find out afterwards or at some point that, you know, there's a pregnancy happening, or they're just getting serious in their relationships with someone. You sort of find that like there's a group of those younger teachers that are kind of, they are actually listening to the, oh my gosh, they're talking about their kids' stories, and they're drawing experience from it. Cause I've had a couple come up to me and say, yeah, like, how do you sort of like make the teaching and the kids and all that? I don't know how you make it work. And I love those seekers. I love those seeker conversations because I'm mind blown that anyone would ask me about like what feels like advice. You know, like you said, like the fact that I have kids and I'm married and it's all good is mind blowing to me sometimes that I'm in this place. And I really dig those moments where you're sort of asked about it because you feel like you drop a lot of the masks and you're just able to kind of speak and you smile. Like when I talk about it, I feel it's those moments of escape from what we do on the day-to-day in the school, and when colleagues are so open and asking about like, yeah, like I really love that story that you told about your son that really cracked me up. It reminds me of the conversations that my spouse and I are having now about what it's going to be like when we have kids. And you just feel the circle close. Like it's such a nice kind of moment to sort of be able to share in a way that it's teaching, sure, but it's just got a real sweetness to it. I don't know. It's the dad and me talking. I guess it's the teacher and me talking. And it's also the collaborator. Like I've realized this couple years that I really do enjoy talking about my kids with who will ever listen. And that's a bit surprising to me. Surprise. Not that I don't love my kids, but that I'm the guy that's doing that. I'm the guy that's talking about my kids. So cool beans, even saying stuff like that.
I hope you enjoy your weekend, get to spend time with your kids.
Yeah.
I hope your weekend thinking is relatively good and doesn't involve too much weekday thinking. We backed off of the hour and a half Joe Rogan podcast style stuff. We're back to almost an hour. So
classic. We're back to classic decoded.
So for Sarah and maybe Paul McGuire, you know, they can find now other stuff to do with their free time since we're not talking the whole time.
Paul McGuire. Kudos to Paul McGuire too. I know he's out there listening. We appreciate you. We appreciate you.
And anybody else who stumbles on this right at the end of the podcast, thanks.
Yeah, it's true. Eh? What were they talking about? I'm still waiting for the live, someone that sort of is like listening live. I don't know if we've really...
Dude, you would have been dead by now if you were holding your breath.
Yeah. That's a good saying. I like that. I haven't heard that one before.
I'm still stoked about what you said about my theory into practice stuff earlier. That connection. I love it. Okay, right. Chris, have a good one.
You too, buddy. Take care.